This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving or are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Hello, my friend, Karen.
Hello, did you notice that I did my name introduction like a newscaster?
Yeah. We were talking about the news broadcast journalism before this, and Karen took on a very TV-ready tone.
I mean, I'm ready for the job. I don't know about things, but I can cold read and I can do the voice.
You know, they don't teach anything at radio television school.
Did you go?
No, but I have family that did. A father
right.
And a sister. Yes. Broadcast.
Did your sister go too?
Yes. I mean, I think she'd probably be offended that I just said they don't teach you anything. She's very smart and learned a lot of it in college. And I apologize, Lisa, if you're listening.
Lisa, we know you're listening because you're one of the great podcast support sisters there is.
Yes.
And I'd love to hear her actual trained TV radio voice.
I would like to also see some of her early on camera work in Spokane, Washington.
Yeah. Oh, for real?
Yeah.
This is Lisa Fairbanks, became a teacher. Live at the Space Needle.
Yes.
Stuff like that. Yeah. Yes. A lot of head gestures. Bobbing.
I have good news, but bad also. Bees are back. You know how the last couple of years I've joked about how bees are just gray and kind of limping on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
The other day, I got stung on my hand. Well, the bee stinger was like on my shirt. I fell skateboarding. I dusted off the dirt. And then all of a sudden there was a stinger, a disembodied stinger in my hand. And I just pulled it out. No big deal. It wasn't that painful. I just felt what a privilege to finally get stung by a bee again. Because it's been
back.
A decade. Then yeah. 2 days later, my hand looked like a bagel. Like a gelatinous bagel hand. And I just did an EpiPen in my leg and it went down. So there's nothing really to show. But it was I guess I'm allergic to bees is my story.
Or it was not a bee stinger.
It could have been a stinger from something else.
Yes. Something much more deadly.
Oh, God.
We'll be right back.
And now the weather.
And now.
God, we nailed that package.
Yeah, we really did.
Zoom in on the freeway shoe.
We have to introduce our guest now.
Yes,
we
have such a good guest today. I'm so very excited.
It's very exciting.
Karen,
to kick off
do the
season
honor.
Three, our premiere guest for season three.
This is our season three premiere episode?
Yes, it is.
That should have been one of the first things we mentioned.
I know, but we don't do it that way.
I had my bagel hand story. Sometimes things have to take backseat to a good bagel hand story.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've seen her perform at clubs and colleges all over the country. Please, and Star Search. Please welcome the legendary Miss Margaret Cho.
Thank you. Oh,
clubs and colleges, comedy on the road with John Viner.
John Viner's comedy on the road. Half hour comedy hour.
Half hour comedy hour.
A&E's the A-list.
Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yes.
MTV's half hour comedy hour with Mario Joyner.
HBO's Ladies of the Night. The HBO ones, the cable ones were always, they equated all female comics with being whores and sluts. So it was always like Ladies of the Night, yeah. Night walkers with microphones. It was always, the name had to involve sex work usually.
Yeah, like with fishnet yes. stockings in the logo.
Yeah.
And like a dark alley and high yeah. heels.
Yeah.
That is
and
so
welcome
bizarre.
Diane Ford. Diane Ford.
Susie Essman.
Margaret Smith. I love all those comedians, by the way.
Legendary.
Carol Leifer.
They were the ones that made us believe we could do it, right?
So incredible.
Yeah, what did Sandra Bernhardt host?
She hosted the A-list. She hosted the
okay.
A-list.
Yeah. She was great.
She was the greatest.
She is great.
She yeah, is still great. Is.
Yeah, still is.
One of the best recurring Letterman guests of all time.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Did anyone ever see the time she tried to get Dave to use a rowing machine, like to do a workout with her, and she got up and went over to a rowing machine. It was like, come on, Dave, and was rowing really hard while she was yelling at him to come and work out with her. Oh. It was like, it was so hilarious and insane.
I love that. I think I do remember that. I don't know why I thought it was an elliptical or like one of those.
This could be, we could do a tiebreaker and actually find out what it was. But
in my mind, it's a VersaClimber, but maybe that's from Truth or Dare.
I'm of the belief that it was a Nordic track.
Yeah.
What about the gazelle? Remember that one? Both arms and legs going.
Yeah, that guy. He was little. Something little.
Tony Little.
Get me started on TV exercise, guys.
Tony Little. That's
Tony
right.
Little.
With a little ponytail.
Tony Little's little ponytail.
Mm-hmm. It kind of looked like he had a perm.
Yeah.
And he really loved cardio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a visionary.
Did I tell you one time I got so drunk that I ordered a Pilates machine? I drank a whole bottle of Maker's Mark when I was working at Caroline's in the early, like 2000s, or maybe it was the late 90s. And I ordered it. I didn't even order it on the internet. I ordered it off television.
No.
I was so drunk. And I don't think I gave them the right, correct, like credit card information because it never came and nobody ever charged me.
Oh, like you charged somebody else for a Pilates machine.
Somebody got a Pilates machine that I ordered when I drank a whole bottle of Maker's Mark. That's so disgusting. But yeah.
That's how we did it back then.
Yeah. It was like the 90s because it was at the Mayflower Hotel, I remember, and it was like on a landline, like a push, like a not a rotary phone, but you know.
The push button.
Yeah.
But that's when, it's when you're drinking a full bottle of whiskey that you're like, tomorrow everything changes. And it starts with this torture bed. I don't know. I don't understand Pilates. There's like I've done it, but there's like a wooden bed on wheels with bungee cords and it essentially stretches out your spine.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It looks like an old torture device.
It does. I was taking Pilates classes for a little while in the mid-2000s, and it was that thing where, you know, like there's one thing, the first exercise they have you do is like laying down and just kind of pulling yourself. But every time I would just feel my spine go ding, 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 like
yeah.
pull apart mm-hmm. in a really satisfying way.
Yeah, it feels good. It's hard, but I think it feels good, but it doesn't really, I think you have to do it a lot. To
yes.
see any sort of results.
Yes.
That's the impression I got when I was doing it. It's like, I wasn't necessarily tired. So I'm like, oh, this is something you have to do every day. This is a lifestyle. And I don't think it's going to take.
No.
And it's they're very proud of it. Very expensive.
They're so expensive.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the video of the person who claimed that they had gotten their vaccination shot and then their leg It was the video. She took a video of her own leg in the hospital bed and it was just shaking. And I couldn't stop laughing because I was like, first of all, I have seizures. So that is not a seizure.
Yeah.
And secondly, that's exactly what would happen when I would try to do Pilates. Like the level of just full on shaking because you can't like your muscles just aren't that strong and you can't really control it. And I was just like, lady, this is a Pilates reaction entirely.
She also had like an iPhone charger poised like to look like a port, like a chemotherapy port, but it was just stuck to her chest. Like that's an iPhone charger. Like it's like so. It's so ridiculous.
Yes.
She was like pretending to be in the hospital then.
Yeah. She was in the hospital. She had just gotten her booster and then basically claimed, I don't know if she brought herself to the hospital because she was claiming she was having these reactions because of, sorry, not the booster, the vaccination, her first shot. Mm-hmm. But she was posting on social media to say, this is what they're not telling you about. And then basically from a laying down position, just lifting up one leg and then just letting it shake from no core strength. This is what it looked like to me. It was very familiar looking to me and not scary.
Uh-huh. Look, she just drank a lot of coffee. That was all of her.
Oh. But I think she had started a GoFundMe too. Like she was trying to make money from her disability, her supposed disability from getting the vaccine. So it was a big scam.
Oh, that was supposed to be like, now go to my GoFundMe and help me with my shaky leg.
She should be arrested. Here, donate to my leg shakes.
That's what I think that's what happened, is that she had like started a GoFundMe and made some money because people were siding with her and believing her. I mean, that whole anti-vaccine thing is just so insane.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all people that are just scamming other people.
And it's such so few people, but it's getting constant coverage. So it's such a small amount of Americans who feel that way. Mm-hmm. And yet they just get constantly covered and shown on the news. It's
and
ridiculous.
I say this as a broadcast journalist, I don't think the media is our friend.
I don't think they make good decisions when it comes to these scare tactics.
Everyone's after a dollar.
Not us.
Not us. No, I don't. I require no money. I got everything I need right in this room. I did, however, when I saw a series of videos where people were like, there's a magnet. There's a chip in my arm and they're holding magnets to their arm.
What, a key on their forehead. And like, it's like
just their sweaty forehead. They're using the.
It's so stupid. It's so dumb.
I did run a magnet over my new. I'm like, what if it is a magnetized liquid or something? Maybe there's flex in it like Goldschlager. And so I put it over my arm and nothing happened. Nothing happened. I wasn't believing it. I just wanted to try it.
The claim is that the vaccine makes you magnetized.
The claim was a chip, a tiny state of the art, smaller than Rick Moranis's little spaceship, enters into your bloodstream. And so they can keep tabs of you in rural Idaho, you know, where they can see how they're affecting your genes because in rural Idaho, you have the best genes. I don't know why I'm attacking rural Idaho.
I think you were just trying to name a place where maybe people aren't getting monitored. Yeah. Well, and also I've seen lots of people write tweets about this and make jokes and stuff, but it's like your phone is how if they want to monitor you, you hold a thing all day long that enables people to monitor you.
What about the computer in your pants, dum-dum?
Margaret, were you excited to get the vaccine? How was your quarantine?
My quarantine was okay. I mean, it's weird because I really love staying home. I didn't realize how much I love it.
Yeah.
And I have not been able to stay home. I mean, we really haven't been able to stay home for 35 years.
Yeah.
Because we just work all the time and do stand up. So it's like always gone or whatever. So I've just been here, which I love. And I've got to enjoy my house. And, you know, I'm excited to get the booster. I really would like to mix and match. So I'm hoping I don't know. I'm not sure which one I'm going to get, but I have my Modernas, which I got at a Dodger Stadium, mm-hmm. which was really exciting. So now I'm like, oh, I wonder which one I can get, which booster, and I can't wait. I'm so excited.
It's such a weird, like I talk to my therapist about this all the time, where it's just like you overall, you go, oh, there's been a quarantine, but we're all fine and nothing, not that much has changed except for we stay home until you go back out. And like my friend had like 5 people all meet for dinner for his birthday at a restaurant that had like a patio. And I was like, the second I sat down, I suddenly was the quiet person. And I was like, oh, I didn't know what to say. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to interact. And then when I went to tell a story, I had to say, oh, sorry, by the way, I might not stop talking, because that seems to be one of the side effects of me being in quarantine is I can talk I think I always have been very mouthy, but it's like, I can't read the room anymore. So I don't know when my story should end and I will just keep filling the air. And it is so fucking embarrassing and weird. Like I do it on the phone a lot and then I'll be like, oops, I'm sorry. I can stop talking now. But that, to me, I call it the talking disease, is one of the weirdest side effects, because I feel like, you know, as we all know, as comics, reading the room is part of how you survive and why you are or are not good at what you do. Yeah. And I suddenly don't know anymore. I don't have the internal like temperature to go enough. Like I'm doing it right now. You guys know what I'm talking about, and I'm still explaining.
I'm doing that in person too. Like I would tell long, boring stories to my morning skateboarder friends and they're just like, where's this going? And I'm like, oh, I forgot how to be in a social situation. But I have a feeling if you were on stage that, you know, it's different. It's different than being on stage. I don't know how to be at a dinner party, but I can still do stand up, I think.
I mean, I've never known how to be at a dinner party. I've never known how to do any of those things. I either like talk way too much or don't talk enough. And so I've never really ever gotten the balance right. So it's never, I don't know, it's never been an issue. With stand up, though, it's weird because now I'm starting to do shows again and I really don't know what I'm doing because I've really not done it in so long. So that's a weird feeling.
Yeah,
have you done shows?
I have been easing back into, because there's not a lot of shows going on. So I've just found myself getting work and being somewhere where I need to do an hour. And I just fall back on my old material. Everything that I wrote during quarantine was about the situation and no one wants to hear about that. In some ways they do, but I forgot my joke. I'll be in the middle of a joke and I forgot how it ends. Like I just haven't.
Me too. Yeah.
Do you think the audience is understanding and like,
yes,
okay? Or do you feel? Yeah.
They're super excited just to be out.
Yeah.
So they're really happy about it. So there's also a different feeling of like this refreshing sense of like, oh, I'm not in my house.
Yeah.
I like not watching TV.
Yeah.
That's a good, there's like, I think some measure of good faith that you get from that. And so, and I really don't remember any of my own material and I will not go back and look at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I remember it. I'll text it to you.
Okay. please. Cause I just don't, no, I just like, I refuse to go back and look. And so it's something that, I have trouble with, but I figure if I keep on doing shows, it'll work itself out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's,
I'm sure.
Yeah. It's the only way to work through it.
It's just weird because I feel like, I mean, I haven't been doing live stand-up shows or anything like that. I did a couple streaming ones where I was like, this is true torture. Like,
yeah,
I don't know what I'm doing.
It felt really, really bad.
It felt awful. Even if you're doing well, it felt awful. Like there was no winning and it was hilarious. But I just think it's funny that I think on the surface, I would assume everything just, and it's fine. We all tracked this. We all kind of processed it as it went. But then it's almost like, but you step outside and that's when you learn how fucked up you may or may not be from sitting at home for 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's like, you can't really know until you're sitting. Like I was at that dinner. I knew two people were strangers that I met that night. Everyone was super nice. And I still, it felt like seventh grade. It was just like, what in the fuck is this? It's insane.
Yeah, I'm doing both. I'm talking to strangers for too long. But if it's a social situation where it's people I should be comfortable around, I clam up like a weirdo.
Yeah.
So I'm just wasting the time of passersby and loved ones by being silent.
Let's go around in a circle and give each other ideas about great icebreakers if you're ever in that situation. So my idea is something I would say is, what's your favorite birthday you've ever had? Something like that, where it gets people talking.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, like I think it's just like, what was the thing that you remember most about junior high, which is like the worst part of life?
That's really good. Get people to talk about like actual trauma.
The worst part distant. Of life.
Yes.
But like distant. Very worst. I think junior high is the worst.
Yeah. What's for your sure. most memorable childhood trauma? I'll talk for hours.
Yeah.
I would love to hear that question.
Yeah, me too. Because I think these days we want to talk about real shit.
Yeah.
Right?
I was so shy and like got bullied a lot in junior high. So I would sit on the toilet and eat lunch. Eat and not be bothered. I would eat like a burrito that, you know, they were like so hot in the inside. Like
those microwave burritos.
The microwave burritos that you get in the cafeteria. Like a long one. And I would sit on the toilet and eat it. And then people would come into the bathroom and be like, why is that so like, always in that stall? It's so weird.
A long burrito is it's the best thing to be eating on a toilet.
On the toilet. And just sitting there eating it like perfectly happy, reading the graffiti and just biding my time. I think it was like, I wanted to be isolated.
Yeah. You needed a moment to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay? And I'm just admitting this. Sometimes I still enjoy, I will bring food into the bathroom with me. Let's just say that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I bring beverages in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
I like to wash my insides while I wash my out.
Nice.
With White Claw.
I used to really enjoy a beer in the shower, especially if we were getting ready to go somewhere. That was a very 90s, early 2000s move of, well, not early 2000s because I stopped drinking in the 90s, but the height of my drinking days when we lived in that crazy house on Alexandria, it would be like, oh, we're about to have a party and I have to get myself together from the party from last night and I have to, you know, collect my thoughts and wash my hair. So I would just be drinking a Sierra Nevada. It was just like trying to be edgy, but like in the privacy of my own home. It felt like.
Well, that house, the Alexandria house, I always think about like, I think you and me and Greg were in there in the morning drinking Baron Jaeger, not even Jägermeister. It was Baron Jaeger, the honey. It comes in like a weird, like hay container.
Yeah.
Like it has like a raffia jacket that you would take off. And then we were drinking that in the morning.
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't know
wow.
if we'd stayed. I don't know if I'd stayed over. Also, at that house one time, I was pregnant and I took acid and I didn't know I was pregnant, but I took the acid and then I was like, there's someone in here in my body.
Oh, wow. And you were right.
That was Christmas party.
That was Christmas party. Yeah. That
we took and acid. People were like, we took acid at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right. Right.
And then the Christmas party started and I was wearing a silver vinyl dress that zipped up the front. And at first I started with that, one of those 50s kind of sheer blousey, almost like a night blouse.
Yeah.
And I was so cold at one point, someone goes, your lips are blue. Because it was fucking December.
Yeah.
It was a Christmas party. So then I changed into a turtleneck. A turtleneck under the vinyl dress. And people were like, you're the best host. And I mean, my pupils must have been like, my eyes must have been completely black. It was insane. And it was just, to me, it was all like lights and faces and smiles. And that was the Christmas party. I think you were in the room for this, Margaret, but this is one of my favorite memories of all time. I went into the kitchen and Brian Regan had The Joy of Cooking open and he was sarcastically reading it to somebody. And it was so funny.
Yeah.
It was, I can't even explain. He was just like, oh, half a cup of flour. And everyone was just like going crazy.
So funny.
It was really nice. Wait, what,
how many comics lived in this drug den?
It was just me. My other two roommates were not comics, but everybody was thinking about this too. This was this time where we all, we spent every hour of the day together. So, you know, we'd always get together for maybe lunch, definitely dinner. Then we'd go do sets and most people were on the same show. And then we'd go to Fellini's and then we go to someone's house after 2 a.m. And so probably like that when Margaret and Greg and I woke up at my house, it was just like it was just another it was a Thursday, probably.
Yeah.
And we got up and we were insanely hungover. And then it was just like, now we have to go to Toy and meet everybody for lunch. It was just like constant. I kind of ran a phone tree where I'd be like, we're all gonna go to we're all gonna get a Toy. Or it was insane. It was
that
just,
sounds fun though. I mean, I
it
know
was very
that,
fun.
Yeah, I never had that really.
Yeah,
I just had a domestic situation when I started comedy. I was home right after the show. Well, not always.
I lucked out because Margaret moved to LA. Margaret had already been living in LA part-time. We met in San Francisco, so when she would come up there, and then when I moved to LA, she was truly my one friend, but she, like, you would go on the road, and I got to stay at that house, but that in that house is where Greg Barrett lived, Laura Milligan lived, Jerry Finelli lived, sometimes Jeanine Garofalo, so it was, I, like, basically was grandfathered into Margaret's friend group, essentially.
That's so exciting, yeah, though.
It was fun.
It's a piece of comedy history.
It was very fun and very crazy. Yeah. 90s. Fen.
It was crazy. But Fen Fen and around the corner from your house was, that's where Greg Barrett and David Cross lived.
Yes.
So that was another party house that if you would just like walk like down the street and they were right around the corner.
I've heard of that because I used to open for Greg a lot and he would tell stories about that house. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a good party house. There was one party where Kathy Griffin would have a Christmas party every year and she got mad one year because it was when she was on Suddenly Susan and all of her comedy stand-up friends were embarrassing her in front of her Suddenly Susan friends. Uh-huh. And remember she ended the party early because people were like sliding down the stairs. So we all walked out on the street. So I just started inviting everybody over to Greg and David's house because I was like, oh, well, let's just meet there. And I told everybody at this party to go to their house. And then I went home because I was drunk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Greg called me super mad. He's like, hey, so your party started. Are you going to come to it? I was like, sorry, I can't come. I'm too drunk.
That's the best move ever.
It's so good.
It was pretty bad.
I would think that her Suddenly Susan friends would love watching comedians slide down the banister.
You'd think. I mean, I think it was just a self-consciousness.
Who was in
piece.
That? Brooke Shields?
Yeah. And
Brooke
Jed
Shields
Nelson.
Would love to watch comedian after comedian slide down a handrail.
Why like, not?
I don't know, though.
Come
I
on,
guess
Brooke.
Not.
But she Who married was? Chris Henshey, so she did love it. So she did love it.
Yeah.
Is that she a must comic? Have
loved it. He was a comedy writer.
Oh,
he was
wow.
a comedy writer, and he was a regular at Fellini's, mm-hmm. and my favorite Chris Henshey memory is one night. And I mean, at this bar, we would get so drunk. And so, I mean, that's Baron Jaeger. We were like into subsets of Jaeger.
Yes.
Is how alcoholic, at least I was for sure. There was one night where Chris Henshey was telling me a story and I kept taking a cigarette out of a pack and then lighting it. Then I would react to his story and start gesturing with my hands. And then basically, and then I'd be like, oh, I was going to smoke a cigarette. This is so long ago. You could still smoke in bars. And after a while, I went to get a cigarette and my pack was empty. And I was like, who smoked all my cigarettes? And I looked down on the ground and I had tried to light and drop 20 cigarettes. That's how drunk I was and how like not aware of what the fuck I was doing.
And
it was
you were just throwing them on the ground.
Yeah, I would like.
Even
would
doing that with one cigarette. But 20.
20 in a row, where it just be kind of like, I would get caught up in whatever the story was. And that's how drunk we were. And then just like fall out of my hands. And I'd be like, oh, I need to get a cigarette.
Yeah, so normal. It's so normal, though, to put away like 20, 30 drinks, something like that at like Pedro's or Fellini. I mean, but Fellini's, we would never go there until at least 2 a.m. They would usually stay up until about 4.
Yeah. They would lock the door. So mm-hmm. we got to stay there after hours because we were friends with the bartenders. It was really bad. And it's a miracle that no one died or well, was
because
arrested.
We were also driving.
Yes.
There was no Uber. But there was no Uber. There was no there's no taxis in Hollywood.
Oh, I mean, Hollywood. Okay.
We didn't have far to go, but I mean, that's the other crazy thing, too. Who was driving? I don't know.
I drove all the time.
I must
drunk.
Have been driving, but I can't remember if I was driving or not. I must have been.
You must have been. And I was for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it was a true blur.
Back in, 15 years ago, I would, and people always frowned on it, but I just had a blanket and pillow in my car. And if I had too much to drink, I always slept in my car. You know, I got my pepper spray and my brass knuckles, but I'd sleep in my car all the time.
That's smart, actually.
Yeah,
that's
actually way better.
And it's never get a good night's sleep. But it is kind of nice to wake up at the crack of dawn and drive home with the windows down at 5:30 a.m.
But safer.
Safely, for sure.
Yeah, it's better than driving drunk. I mean, I don't remember how we got home every night, but we did.
Yeah.
You know,
we were incredibly lucky. And like, I think of it driving in the daytime now sometimes of like, you know, sometimes just every once in a while, like somebody will step off the sidewalk and then you stop short. And I'm just like, how did that not happen to us at night while we were drunk driving? Like, it's just bone chilling to think of how close we could have been to something really horrible happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's true.
We got out of it.
We got out of it.
And we moved on.
We moved on, but it was, I think it's just like being young and just the way that I'm so glad that social media didn't exist. Could you imagine if we'd had that then? Like, we'd just been so embarrassing. Like, all of the things, like all the things that we didn't even take photographs. It's all just in our memory.
Yes. There's one night from Fellini's that I have photographs of that are so hilarious because at that point I was on Fen-Phen, which was essentially speed. And,
you know, there's a lawsuit. You maybe have a lot of money coming towards you.
I bet I do. Well,
yeah, there's
sure.
a Fen-Phen lawsuit.
I'm sure.
I've seen it
so
on
bad.
TV.
But my eyes in every picture, like my eyelids are nowhere near my irises. I have the widest, craziest eyes and like smiling, like where you can see my gums in the back. It's just scary. It's like, it must have been horrifying.
It sounds like you were just happy. Just smiling, surrounded by 20 cigarettes.
It was just.
I don't.
It was crazy.
It was a dangerous time and unhealthy, but all this talk has made me want to go to a house party.
I know, right?
I've been just home
they can still be fun. They can still be fun. Yeah.
They can.
I mean, I think a house party, it's like also a house party full of comics, I think would be fun.
Yes.
Now, just because we never see each other. So it
well,
would be
Karen,
nice.
Karen's going to throw another party, right, Karen?
I will.
And
you know
Margaret,
what
you should
do?
Go. I'm inviting people to other people's parties like you used to.
I deserve it.
Let's go to David Cross's.
Yes.
Let's get the old
gang back together. Remember they would play like at David and Greg's house? There would always be like a craps game in the driveway. And there was somebody, I think it was like a celebrity. Some celebrity came. Maybe it was Vince Vaughn and
Vince
played
Vaughn.
Craps and beat everybody, took the money and walked away.
So incredible.
And because like, he was in Swingers.
Yeah.
He did all that research.
It was either Vince Vaughn or Toby Huss. Toby Huss was like a weirdly like at every party too.
Oh, yes.
Kind of vaguely like looking like Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, he is the guy that acted like Frank Sinatra on MTV, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all I know of him.
A great character actor. And he he reminded me of, like, he wasn't a stand-up per se. He could if he wanted to, and he was an amazing live performer and stuff. But he was always the one that, like, when I was being my most idiotic, then I would look over, and if Toby Huss was standing there, the shame would pass over me, because he was like a real adult with a real career, it felt like, where I was like, oh, my shit isn't going to fly over that direction.
Well, he also has one of those faces like he's always disappointed in you. His resting disappointment face.
He does.
Well, he just looks so cool. And it was that weird... 90s as 1940s.
Yes. He looked like a Dust Bowl migrant who had come out. He was wearing the same jeans for 5 years. He also did the thing that I loved where he crossed his legs, like kind of like a woman, like his knee went all the way over, and then he would cross his hands while he was smoking a cigarette. And that was exactly how my Uncle Steve used to do it. And it was just there's something about Toby Huss that is just so like, he's like a lead character. And even though it's supposed to be your life, you're like, oh, the lead character's here. Like, he's a legend.
I just think of him like outside of Laura Milligan's house, because Laura had it was like a shanty or a shack that was so, it was like they had built it themselves. Her and Mike had built it themselves out of planks that they found at like the flea market. I mean, it was just so incredible, like rustic farmhouse.
Yep.
And, you know, Toby Huss standing outside with just like that Grapes of Wrath kind of drag.
Yep.
With his legs swung all the way over. I know exactly what you mean about the crossed leg. It's like a feminine thing that looks really masculine on him.
Incredibly masculine. And like a Lee button down cowboy shirt with pearlescent buttons. He just, the whole look is, you know what it was? There was hipsters in LA that would try to buy those clothes and wear them. But he actually had already owned them. Like, he was the real deal. Like, that people were kind of trying to dress like or look like.
Well, like, people would in Japan would be taking that picture to their hairdresser and be, could you make my hair look like this? Like, it's that kind of like so iconic.
Yes.
It's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. The greatest.
Yeah.
That shack party. There was one, Laura threw me a birthday party one time and I was 3 hours late to it. Because of the fucking Fen. I could never leave my house. I would start getting ready. But, you know, this is like, don't do drugs. They fuck you up so badly where I just like, I would be doing my eye makeup for like 2 hours. Like, I couldn't get out of the mirror. So,
Wait, what did Fen do? It's not related to fentanyl or whatever, right?
It's a diet pill. Okay. It's like an old school, like diet pill from, I think maybe the 1930s, but they, mixed it with another diet pill that was like a downer. So you had an upper and a downer at the same time. So you didn't go as like crazy. So it wasn't like a mother's little helper kind of 60s situation. Right. It was like kind of supposed to even you out, but it made you really nuts. And it was bad for your heart. Well, isn't a
simultaneous upper and downer classically how you die in your sleep?
I mean, I think
it's a speedball.
That's Yeah, the old speedball.
They all go out like that. So,
But it made you lose weight. So, I mean,
so fast.
I lost 30 pounds in a month. Yeah, remember that so British quickly. Girl that went, Karen, are you eating one lettuce leaf a day? And we used to say that to each other all the time. Remember that? And I was so mad that anyone would comment on it. It's like, I truly dropped half of my weight. No, I was not half of my weight, but a significant amount of weight in 1 month. And it was crazy.
But I got them from this costumer who had worked in like the sort of Disney lot in the 90s when I was doing television there. So there was like, you know, all of these actresses, because everybody in the 90s was really, really thin.
Yeah.
So there was no way to, for me, like my body's just not going to do that on its own. Like I can't do that with diet and exercise. There's just no way I could ever imagine. So we were all getting them through the same sort of channels there. It was all doctors in Burbank.
All doctors in Burbank that you never really saw their face.
Mm-mm.
It was all very shady. But, and then when you basically were like, oh, this has made me go insane, there's no one to go back to be like, hey, can I get this adjusted? It would be like the office would be abandoned or whatever.
Yeah.
It was so shady.
It was so shady, but it was like, I think now there's a lot of lawsuits around, like class action lawsuits around that drug. But for a minute, it just seemed like the promised land, you know, that kind of like dieting and exercise. You just didn't have to think about food.
Yeah.
You had that pill.
I did not care for the first time in my life. It was just like, oh, yeah, whatever. It was
so
amazing.
You were really eating one lettuce leaf a day?
One lettuce leaf a day. It was insanity. Well, what we did was shop at the Beverly Center compulsively.
And Melrose Avenue.
And Melrose. Yeah. There was a lot of shopping in a kind of like frenzied panic about nothing.
I couldn't get enough shirts with like polo shirts with like a zipper, like with a ring. Like I couldn't get enough things with a zipper with a ring, which is the most like 90s thing, is like any kind of zipper with a ring and like tiny barrettes.
Yes, it was
big
very
belt.
It was like Brady Bunch cosplay. There was
a
lot of polyester outfits where you're like, this smells, someone else wore it 40 years ago and I'm boiling hot.
Yeah.
And like it was a lot of men's pajama bottoms, you know.
Really stiff things from X-Girl.
Yes.
on Vermont, where you would like buy, you know, there was a store that was next to the Beastie Boys store.
Yeah.
So you would, it was like the girls' leg of the Beastie Boys store. And so you would just buy whatever, I think it was Kim Gordon's line.
Yeah, and just take anything they had.
Anything, it didn't matter. And it was always very stiff and kind of painful.
Yeah. When I lived with Tig, she, for a few days, our house was a drop-off point for Katrina things, boxes of diapers and things. I had to move my bed out. I was moving furniture out so we could move these boxes in. And Kim Gordon came into our living room, and I'm a big Sonic Youth fan. It was like the first CD I purchased with Sonic Youth from Columbia House. I put a stamp down. Anyway, I know that Tig didn't know who. Tig just had one Aerosmith cassette. And I was like, oh, you can put the stuff in. I was just talking to some lady. And then she left. And Tig was like, that was Kim Gordon. And I'm like, Kim Gordon from Sonic Youth was just in my house. It was the coolest thing ever.
She is the coolest. I mean, she's incredibly cool.
Yeah. And, do you know her?
I know. I'm friends with her on like Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge Sonic Youth fan. And
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I love her. And I did love X-Girl actually still exists in Japan.
Oh, wow.
And it's not, it's a different kind of look now, but it,
when
it's
you
a
say
very
it was next
cool
to the Beastie Boys store, is it Paul's Boutique? Is it, or is that
no,
just
the no, album? The Beastie Boys had,
because there's a store on that album.
It was almost like the first tennis shoe store or whatever they're called.
Yeah. It was like a streetwear, like one of the first streetwear sort of outlets, places that you would get like sort of the big Kahart jeans. Yeah. And
was it extra large?
It was extra large. Yeah. And then it was X-Girl. Yeah.
I'm a fashion man about town.
Look, right. You know.
Yeah, there's a gorilla graphic. X large.
Yeah.
Right.
I think they still make stuff.
But we lived on Vermont. It was like a MacBooks and it was
EK.
EK, which EK is still there.
They're still there.
Which I love.
And that, is it a MacBooks that had like all those graphic novels that we would read?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of the true crime books that I read came from a MacBooks.
Yeah.
And that guy now owns an Etsy shop where he sells a lot of the stuff that he had liquidated his, you know, inventory from a MacBooks. And he doesn't have a brick and mortar store, but he has a store on Etsy now.
Parents had a bookstore, right?
My parents had a bookstore on Polk Street called Paperback Traffic. it's a big tobacco store now where you would get like vapes and vape liquid, vape juice. But so it gross. was uh, a big gay bookstore in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Oh, that's awesome. Have you seen the, either of you seen the documentary about Circus of Books?
Yes.
And it is so, and it's the most unlikely older couple that was got into making gay porn. It was such a cool story. I loved it. It's such a great story.
Yeah, it's a great documentary.
Yeah, and those, guess what that place is now? It's a vape store.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a weed dispensary.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It's a weed.
I see a lot of people vaping. I didn't. Of course, it's probably marijuana vapor. But yeah.
That's what I miss. I mean, I'm sobes, so don't do anything.
Yeah.
But I do miss weed vaping, not weed smoking.
Yeah.
And certainly not dabs. Dabs would just kill me.
Dabs.
Do you ever do dabs?
What is, no. I pretend to know what it is. Is that when there's black stuff at the end of a paperclip and you kind of freebase it? Or was I doing something?
That's like hash oil or
okay,
like a
resin. I've done that. It made me hide in a closet for 24 hours.
Yeah, that's too
intense. The same thing. But it's like you get like a nail, like which is a sort of a, some kind of a base that you heat up with a huge like flamethrower,
yeah,
and get like red hot, and then you put resin on that, so it's like smoking the same, it's the same thing that you would smoke. It's
that's when weed would feel like you're doing heroin or something. Like there's when you're there's implements and you got to heat up a thing and put another thing on it, that's what would make
like a blowtorch though, like you need like a lot of butane to be able to heat it up. Like you can't just do it with the lighter, you need something that blows fire.
Yeah, no. That should be the line of demarcation right there.
It's too much. But I do miss the weed vape.
Yeah. If it doesn't work.
There's a building in Missoula that David Lynch, I guess, he's from Missoula, Montana, believe it or not. And there was a building that, that Blue Velvet. But yeah, I did the hash oil thing and I hid in a closet. I ended up after 20 hours finally calling my dad and saying I smoked something. I'm dying in a closet, and he had to come pick me up at this scary hotel. It was just imagine the hotel from Blue Velvet, and that's being paranoid and hidden in a closet. I never did this stuff again.
It's too strong, anything butane based.
It's too strong.
Terrible. Terrible.
Too much.
It's for the young, but there's just no reason. All those drugs.
I was 20. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you're going to, people will do them, but
sure.
I don't know. It feels like kids these days might be a little bit smarter. I felt like I was like, well, I got to do this. Like I'm 23. Let's do this thing.
Yeah. They're funneling vodka in their butts and stuff. There's other things they're doing, but I think drugs are just whack. If you offer a kid drugs now, they'll be like, no, thanks, loser.
No way, dude.
Drugs are for nerds.
Like, doing like a K off of Scott's house key. That's like somewhere in San Francisco with like the hotel on Knob Hill and doing bumps of K off of Scott's house key and then laying in the bed like two old ladies, like just him and me in the bed. Like it's so, it was a weird, K is a weird drug. I'm like, is that even a fun drug? I don't remember any good drugs. Really.
Did you fall into a K-hole?
Yeah. Is that what a K-hole is?
Probably.
Yeah.
Just, you know, you just want to get in bed.
Yeah. I remember we did ecstasy one time. It was me, you, Ebby, and Scott in your room in that apartment that was on like 14th or something.
Yeah, 14th. And it was by Tweaker Safeway.
Yeah.
Yeah, by Tweaker Safeway. Yeah.
And we did ecstasy and you guys were all like, wow, it's amazing. And I was just sitting there and it was just, it felt like I'd used dandruff shampoo. My scalp was lightly tingling and that was the only difference. And I was like, there's something wrong with me. But and remember the lights were out and we were listening to Crowded House and they're smoking. And that was like our drug night.
That was the best. I mean, I think, was it Together Alone or maybe it, I don't know which record was it?
I think it was Together Alone, right?
Yeah. With like Four Seasons in One Day and all those big hits.
Yeah. And those beautiful, like, you know, the oral composition of it, like there's a bunch of shit happening. And so then if you're on drugs, it's like even better sounding.
So many different sounds. And we were listening to one on a compact disc.
Yeah.
And so we heard so many things. Yes.
Much like us. Very compressed.
It was really good.
What a time.
During that
time. It was different. Yeah. Oh, sorry. It was different than doing drugs at Ramona. Because Ramona felt like we were really like stepping out. Like we were going to an exotic location.
Yeah. Ramona. Wait, that's the mine in Scott's apartment?
Yeah.
Because I was trying to remember the name of that fucking street the other day.
Oh.
So Ramona, hard. Yeah. I could not fucking remember. I was just, it was driving me insane. But that apartment, I was talking about how I used to sneak into Scott's room and steal pot out of his drawer. Mm-hmm. And I knew he was trying to see if I was doing that. So I would go in there and look around for like a hair that he had laid over. Like I was like the most high level criminal. Where it's just like, I'm sure if I said to him, like, hey, if I give you $20, can I just have some of your pot? But mm-hmm. instead I would just be like going in and breaking things off and taking the hair and putting it on the desk and taking the pot and then putting it back. Like it was dirty.
So great.
It was dirty business. It was funny. Not nice behavior. Desperate times at the Gap.
Was this like early 2000s or late 90s? Or
it was early 90s, man.
This is like 91, 92, 90, yep. 93, see, 94,
I was in algebra.
Oh, yeah. Man. No.
Little baby.
I was living the life in San Francisco. But like all of my friends that work, I'm still friends with a bunch of the people that work there. Do you remember Jason Lopez?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Dave Musper, Jason Lopez. There was like
he came to one of my shows and introduced himself to me as your good friend.
Yes, yeah. He has been my friend since I was 19, and he used to go to the Improv when we would go do sets on Mondays or Sundays or whenever we would go do sets. He has been there, like watching me do comedy, and then once I started doing podcasts, he's listened to every podcast done.
He's listening mm-hmm. right now.
He's listening right now. He really is.
He was very sweet. I remember meeting him and he said he was your old friend and I believed him.
He was in love with Greg Proops. So right. Anytime Proops was going to be the headliner on the Showcase show was it on Monday night or Sunday at the Improv? Do you remember?
Monday. It was Mondays.
It was Mondays.
Sundays was the punchline. So Mondays was the Improv because they would have the National Theater of the Deranged, which would do the Improv show before.
Yep.
And then they would do, so they had their own sort of thing, and then they would do the Comedy Showcase, and it was always, Greg was there. Yeah.
It was so, what a time, what a cool place to come up. I mean, I'm so grateful.
It's so cool. Yeah. But it's also like, it doesn't feel like that much time has passed either. You know, in a lot of ways, like comics kind of. Like I saw Greg today, actually. We did an Instagram live. I was like leaving and he was coming in or vice versa. But it's like, I don't feel like it was that long ago.
Right.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah. No, it's true. But so much shit has happened. It's just weird. It's like, it's a very, it was such a crazy group of people all trying to do like the same thing at the same time. And then, you know, everyone kind of just arced out and took their path.
Yeah.
Just crazy.
I wanted to move there around that time when I was still in high school, just because that's where you moved to be a skateboarder.
San Francisco?
Like, yeah, you, because of all the hills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just bombed down hills. And I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad my dad said, no, you should go to college here in Montana. But I love that city. It's so exciting. Do you guys still love going back there or? How do you feel
it's
about
so
the
different.
City now?
I was just there. I was in Sacramento on Saturday. I was going to tell you, I did a thing at the Crest Theater.
Oh,
and there was just, I mean, I'm like the old lady now because there was a, some kind of like drum and bass, like dubstep concert in the park outside my hotel room. And it was making me so mad. These kids. With their dubstep, it's too loud. Turn that bass nectar down. Like I was so angry.
Was it
angry.
The Electric Daisy Carnival?
Something like that. Like it was so loud and it was really infuriating. And I just was like, it was bleeding into my super high density earplugs. And I could hear it even through my earplugs. And I was just like fuming. But San Francisco is very different now. Like it's very... None of the real sort of landmarks are there that we knew of. Like all of the stores are different and
bars.
It's just different. Yeah, the bars are different. Everything, the restaurants too. Everything's different.
And also, I don't think the, especially like the way I lived, where that first house we lived on at Clayton and Waller with Christy and, yeah. and Dave, I think I paid $350 a month for my room. Yeah. Now, it was the room under the stairs that I think used to had been a broom closet.
But it was a Victorian. I mean, yeah. it was like...
It was a great apartment.
Very beautiful apartment with huge windows and like bay windows in that front. I mean, it was like a classic San Francisco Victorian house.
Yeah. And we got, I mean, those
that
guys paid.
So cool.
So our rent must have been $1,350 a month because I think Dave and Christy paid five and I paid $350.
And now that house is $15 million.
Truly. Like, I think if you rented that first floor apartment of the Victorian house, you would pay $5,000 a month, especially because it's the Upper Haight.
At least.
Yeah.
My comedy hometown was Austin, Texas. I moved there in like 99. And Margaret, I remember you being there. I just remember how cool you were because you were politically active. I didn't know comics could make, have sway things politically like you did all
oh,
the,
yeah.
the same sex marriage
oh,
stuff
yeah.
way early 2000s. Yeah. And maybe it wasn't in Austin. I don't know where it was, but didn't like police come to your, I remember.
There was like some kind of thing that happened with me and Bruce Daniels. I believe it was like, we had protesters in like Houston or something, which was super weird.
Oh, Houston.
It was like
okay,
a whole like anti-gay thing. And then there was like a bomb threat in there was like bomb threats in different places like Houston and Atlanta sometimes. The early 2000s was really weird to get like trolled by conservatives.
Yeah.
Because it was pretty violent, you know, and you would get like,
yeah,
things
that's
like that.
Why I bring it up. It's like you're way ahead of your time. I mean,
Thank you.
Kind of thing probably happens to comedians all the time now, but
well, it's
because of
it's
Instagram.
It's very weird. But it's definitely different.
That was like early 2000s, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I thought you got arrested or something. I didn't know the whole story, but
yeah,
I thought it was so cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. It was very cool. Thank you. But it's definitely something that I think now people sort of take for granted, you know, political comics. But back then it was definitely different.
It was for sure. And it was the kind of thing where
good work.
Did you see that thing when this Britney Spears, the conservatorship and everything, all that stuff came up and there was somebody posted the cover of Details magazine from 2003 and she's on the cover, but all of the little like headline kind of things of what the different articles were in that magazine were so atrociously awful and aggro and misogynistic and crazy. And I was like, oh, that's right. That was just regular to us. Like that, the generation that we came up in comedy, especially female comics, were so used to this kind of like serious shit and real active and like very pointed misogynistic shit. Like, just constantly, and you were just kind of like, yeah, that's just this is how it is.
It was a normal joke with her and the little kids from Full House, like, ooh, countdown to 18th birthday.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
on a mainstream magazine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
totally.
Gross.
It's so disgusting, but it's like,
even dogs hate it.
Dogs, she didn't like it. She didn't like it at all.
I'm a chihuahua.
She's like, Amanda Bynes is next. She needs to be
vindicated for sure.
Yeah.
But it was like a reaction against feminism because I think it was like the Riot Girl movement had really made an impression on people and bands like Hole and all of this stuff that was coming out of Seattle, like everything like was going on that was a real testament to being a woman and like Lilith Fair and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so there was this kind of counter thing of like, now we're post-feminism. We can make fun of women because they're equals, right? They're equals, right?
Oh yeah. That,
but it wasn't
well, because it wasn't funny. It was like countdown to their 18th birthday where it's like, whoever's at the center of this has an issue that they need to solve.
I didn't make that up.
No, no, no.
I was in
character.
That's
the one I was talking about. I mean, it's like a disturbing. Yeah, yeah. And also then you think about that where it was like, it was Britney Spears and it was Christina Aguilera and they were being dressed up like schoolgirls and they were part of a machine that was absolutely, you know, like guiding them that way. It wasn't like, this is my artistic expression.
It's really scary.
Yeah. No wonder we were on so many drugs. What were we supposed to do?
Well, to be a smart woman then was to really kind of like always be gaslit by society and be questioning your choices and questioning your presence. And in comedy, it was really hard to know, like, where do we belong or where should we exist even? I think that's why we all like really worship Janine Garofalo, because she was so sure in who she was and what she was doing. Like, how can somebody be so self-assured?
From the beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For real. Yeah. And so funny. Like, and kind of the the permission to be that way and to kind of really try to work to be that way, as opposed to working to please, you know, the audience, which probably is predominantly men. It was just such a weird, like, looking back now, it was like, oh yeah, there were these decisions we were all kind of making without discussing it, because it wasn't of the time at all. And in fact, that was back when, like, when people would be asked, when actresses would be asked if they were feminists back then, and it would be like, oh no, I like everybody. They would give these answers that would break my heart. Yeah. I would just be like, wait,
so
what?
Awful,
like,
so
why
sad.
Would you say that? Thinking that it would be the easiest thing in the world to, declare yourself a feminist because you're a successful woman being interviewed for a magazine. And it would be just be like, oh no, I don't like any of that stuff that alienates people, where it's like, you don't like being paid the same as the guy that does the same job as you? Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't realize that's what it meant.
Well, we just didn't want to have to get into a fight, because there was this idea that feminists were like angry and man-hating and had to wear overalls or whatever. Like,
right. Yeah, maybe, you know, it's like, a way of dismissing it. I don't want to get in that argument or even that discussion right now. So I'll just say I like everyone so we can move on to
like
the next thing. Yeah.
I would wear overalls with like a bra. Like, who is this person? Like, that's so weird to me now. I'm like, who?
The first time first of all, it was in fashion, and it was that kind of thing where it was like, that's that thrift store thing of like, make an outfit out of this old garbage. But the first time I was on TV, the America's Funniest People, I was wearing overall shorts.
Oh, how cute.
Overalls on the top and then cut off at the knees and rolled up.
That's adorable.
Party at the bottom.
So embarrassing.
It's so funny because I knew you. And when I saw that in a rerun, I don't know where you were. I thought it was like the Venice Beach.
It was Old Sack. I had just, I had started stand up like 3 months before I did that.
Well, it was like a Valley Girl.
Yeah, it was like a cheerleader auditioning for a Shakespeare play.
Hey, I remember thinking I remember thinking it was funny. It's like, well, that wasn't a home video. That was early comedian work.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They told everybody, come down and you might be on TV. And then I drove down there with Dave. I'll never forget that. I drove down there. We drove by and there was like a crowd. There was just one guy with a camera on his shoulder and a person holding the mic, and then a small crowd, probably 15 people. And I was like, keep going. I can't do this. Like, keep driving. And Dave's we're parking and you're going to go and do it. And he made me do it.
And the other people were doing magic tricks or handstands.
Yes, or like knock, knock jokes. It was like, you know, it was America's Funniest People. It was just like, what do you got?
Oh, yeah. Funny. Yeah.
Tell us how are you? Yeah. How are you funny?
I still couldn't do that.
We gotta start somewhere.
This isn't the time or the place, sir. And I'd walk away.
I can't just be funny off the top of my head. I mean, it was that too, was that kind of thing where starting stand up was such a scary thing. Like, I wanted to do it so bad, but I was so scared. Like, the first time I did it, I've told the story 1,000 times on this podcast, but I went hysterically blind for like 5 seconds before I did my first set. And it was that kind of thing, but somehow I did it anyway. And then once you're kind of over that hump, it's like, then you're in the mix and you're like, okay, what's next? And where do I go? And how do I, you know, where do I do sets? And how do I keep doing this?
Was that at the Metro?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. That's right. Yeah.
The Metro.
That's why all of our stories are about drinking and doing drugs. Cause I was a pretty good kid. I don't know. I guess I drank in college, but I was so scared to be on stage because who the hell is comfortable? Oh, it's totally normal that I'm in front of people. Of course I drank in order to be. Yes. It's like an occupational hazard. And if you live somewhere like Austin where it's like, hey, here's your cigarettes and your open mic comedy kit and your Shiner beer. Every night was how I would get on stage. Otherwise, I don't think I would have done it. Not that I'm crediting alcohol with starting my career, but it kind of did. It's just, it unfortunately sticks because it's also very addictive. No more. Sober stage time.
Well, it certainly, it nobody's doesn't help better a at, performance. It helps you get
no,
there.
No, it never has.
But then once you're there, you actually have to do something.
Yeah, it doesn't help actual performance. And it sort of, it just gets in the way later. Like, but it does help you get the over the fear or the dread.
Yeah.
Totally.
And then afterwards, everything. The celebration of, I just did that, so I'm going to drink 19 beers.
So fun.
Or I didn't do well. Let me have 18 beers because I didn't do well.
Yeah.
It's one less beer.
Yeah, I'll punish myself by having one less beer.
Yeah.
I'll drink a whole bottle of Maker's Mark and then I'll call up a Pilates commercial and order one.
This machine will do it for me. This machine will make
gonna me do fit. It all.
I hope that machine finally shows up, Margaret.
It's still not here.
It's been so hard.
30 years.
You know, they make that same thing happen with this refrigerator I ordered. Karen's tired of hearing about it.
Chris ordered himself a 4-foot refrigerator from across the country.
Oh,
yeah. He got it was like retro. It was maroon.
A Smeg.
It's like that, but nicer. It looks like a classic hot rod.
Yeah.
For a dad
from
to have Coca-Cola's
in the collection.
Yes. It's got flames up the sides.
Nice.
And a Spider-Man mural. But it took, I didn't want to get it from Home Depot or whatever. So I ordered it from some old guy and he put it on a post-it note and it fell behind a desk, whatever. It took like 5 months, but maybe that's what's happening with your Pilates machine.
Maybe.
Tony Little's just
putting the finishing
senile.
Touches.
That's like the operator at that place is like finally moves over some papers over and it's like, what's the, oh, shoot.
Oh.
2004? Uh-oh. We better express this.
We don't even make those anymore.
I recently moved and then got rid of a bunch of stuff that was in my garage. And there was a Pilates machine that I had ordered and I had never touched it. So it came, I set it up and then I put it in a closet and never even tried to use it.
Oh yeah. I have yoga mats that my cat had peed all over that I'd never even unrolled. They're in the garbage. Yeah. It's like, I don't know why I think buying it's enough. I don't want to do anything.
Right. That moment that you have when you're watching it and you're like, this is it. I'm going to change. Mm-hmm. This is how I'm going to be different.
It's so funny. I ordered one of those half balls with a surface on the other. Mm-hmm. It's like a balance ball. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, that'll get, if I leave it in the living room and it's right here on the floor, if I leave it there, it'll make me, every time I walk by it, I'll have to do some crunches. But no, I just step over it or stub my toe on it. So far, it's been a real hazard.
I did that with a mini trampoline because I was like, hey, when I'm watching TV, it's all that stuff. And it's like the first time I tried to do it, I was like, a mini trampoline is hard. Like if you start doing it and then you're just trying to continue bouncing for a half an hour, I was immediately exhausted. Like, this isn't fucking fun. I was so mad.
Mm-hmm. No, it's
scary. You think you're going to be doing little backflips.
No. You immediately are like, ooh. My thigh muscles. I never use these. Well, have we done it? Have we talked about everything?
I mean, we've done it. I just wanted to tell Margaret, I watched Face Off the other night and I kept pausing it. I did not know you were in Face Off. So I just wanted to say that it was so awesome that you were in
that. I ate so much pie during the making of that movie that they had to add a stretchy panel to the back of the suit because the movie takes place over, I think, the span of about a week. But we filmed over a year and a half because of all the stunts. So I had to actually add a stretchy elastic in the back of my suit. Because I
was someone bringing pies to set.
Yeah, because I was eating pie with John Travolta. Like he started to invite me into his trailer for lunch.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know why, but we would just eat, and he
because he liked you.
Yeah, but we would eat like some kind of pastry, like a beef Wellington for lunch, and then pie. And then one time he ate a whole boysenberry pie. Just to the head with one pie to the head with a fork, just no slices, just the
yes. pie.
And so that's the kind of eating that I was like accustomed to over the year, like a king,
yeah.
like him. And so I gained so much weight that there's like a stretchy panel on the back. Ugh. They were so mad at me at the costume department, but you know,
oh God, I felt bad. The customers. Customers hate it when you're a size 8. So I can't imagine what would happen if you had to have them add a panel.
They had to cut it and then sew it in because they had to have the same suit because we were like shooting like the beginning of a scene like in January, but then the end of the scene like in December. So it was a very... It was rough.
But that was really, I remember when that came out, it was so exciting. Cause aren't you an FBI agent or like you're a cop yeah. of some kind?
I'm like a FBI agent. So it's one of the, you know, the movie, the conceit is like half of the movie, it's like John Travolta and the other half is Nick Cage.
Yeah. So
yeah. He was really, he's in character the whole time. So he was really mean to us, like the first part of the film. For the first 6 months, he was just an asshole.
Nick Cage?
And then the next 6 months, yeah, next 6 months, he was really nice because he's in character the whole time.
Oh, shit.
So
method.
It was so method. So it was like, sir, like, it's scary to work with somebody that's kind of in character the whole time. I mean, I don't know if he does that now, but it was really scary then. And
of course, he's the scariest person all so scary. Hours of the day.
He's great. But he's amazing.
I love it, but he would make
legendary.
Me, I would be scared to be near him.
Well, because that he's like one of those like Steppenwolf rock and roll actors mm-hmm. where he's like in it and to the max yeah. and whatever, like, and he's so accomplished that like, it's like a tornado where he's going to come on and like make it his own.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing, like anytime I've ever done any kind of acting, the second anything happens that I didn't anticipate, I'm like, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. Like, it makes me weirdly, like, I just wouldn't be able to be in a scene, even if I was just supposed to be standing there, because I would get so, like, freaked out by actual, like, and that's the whole game of acting is, yeah. like, you come in and you're this persona and you're, you know, like your energy and all that stuff. And I would just be like, ooh,
like, so don't know what's happening. It was scary because like I was in a scene with Nick once and I'm supposed to yell for the medic and then he collapses. But he decided that he wanted to collapse first before I yelled medic. So I kept on doing it as it was written. And then he just turned and he's like, will you just wait for me to fucking collapse? And then John Woo comes, he's like, oh, just wait for him to collapse. And then I walked away. And I was like so like mortified, you know, like I'm just doing what was in the script. And I was yeah. just like so scared. But,
yeah.
you know, it's just that's how it is.
Yeah.
That's how it is.
What is this show you're in with Kim Joel Booster has been on our show before and he's terrific. You're in a
funniest.
Show with him, right?
Yeah. I did a movie with him and Bowen Yang called Fire Island, which is a reimagining of Pride and Prejudice, but with all Asian gay men. And it's really, yes. really fun. And we just finished. It's
awesome.
Beautiful.
What part are you in Pride and Prejudice?
I'm the mom.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's like all of my daughters are going to find Mr. Darcy. And it's really, I had such a great time with them. They're so funny. And we had our own podcast network. So Joel's is For Your Kimformation is his podcast. And then Bowen's is The Yangover,
yes.
which I think is a really good one. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I love them. They're just the new generation
yeah.
of kids taking over gay comedy.
I love Bowen Yang is killing it on SNL.
So great.
Yeah.
So hard.
And so great.
So in such a beautiful way. It's just such an exciting thing. And Joachim Booster is like, I remember when I first saw him like outside a club or where, you know, some somewhere people doing sets. And he really does look like a model.
Yeah.
Like he's like, so that guy gorgeous. Can't be funny. There's no way.
He's so funny. He's
truly, really one of the best stand-ups.
Yeah.
He's such a great stand-up and he's such a great writer. And he's just so beautiful. But everybody on that film is so gorgeous. And it was like all these guys and they all wore Speedos and, you know, then me just like eating pie.
You with your boysenberry pie.
Yeah, my whole pie. But it's like they all had like veins on their stomach. Their bodies are so perfect. It's like, what the hell?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it's those just Brad so... Pitt veins.
The 2021 gays, I think the pressure is immense. It's very much like the Calista Flockhart 90s for us is how it is for them today.
Yeah.
Because they're all perfect. I mean, they're like, it's crazy, but that's so cool. So that's a movie that's going to come out.
It's a movie that's coming out. And so that we just wrapped that a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
And so I think it'll probably be out next summer. It's a big summer movie.
Amazing.
What else? Yeah. What else? Any other plugs?
I'm doing stand up. I'm at Largo the day before Halloween. I don't know if this will be on by then, but then I'll be at. And then I'm going to Reykjavik for the flight attendant for a while.
Oh. What are you? The TV show?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, if Michelle Gomez is still on it, please say hi to her for me.
Yeah.
She is the greatest.
Yeah. I don't know yet, but I will be there starting in a little bit. So I'm in a few episodes.
Where is that? Norway?
Iceland.
Iceland.
Have you been there, Margaret?
No, I've never been there. Oh, so I'm excited. God.
Oh, that's going to be.
I haven't been either. I want to go so bad.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Ooh, cool. Congratulations.
I'm looking forward to all of the Goodman's daughters. What is it? Goodman's son, Goodman's daughters. That's all their names are?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Bjork's extended family.
No, but there are like so many of them.
Yes.
There's like pretty much everybody's named that. Aren't they?
Yes. And also everybody lives at the southern, just a little southern arc of the whole island. It's just that everybody lives down here because the rest of it is volcanoes and ice.
Oh, wow.
It's a magical place.
Yeah. I've never been, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Margaret, thank you for being here with us. You're the best.
Thank you. You're the best.
Yeah. You're the coolest. It's really good to meet you.
So awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. That's it for us, right?
Yeah. You've been
Do you have any plugs, Chris?
You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYN AR. This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced by Annalise Nelson.
Engineered by Stephen Ray Morris.
Mixed by Roy Tanaka.
Theme song by Karen Kilgariff.
Artwork by Chris Fairbanks.
Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Dynar Podcast. That's DYNAR Podcast.
For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.
Listen, subscribe, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. I like to pause before the horn.